From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. We're talking this hour about the upcoming elections. Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents, the Tea Party, and the list goes on. They all have their respective political messages.
No might be a good short-term political philosophy, but it's not leadership. And that's something that our country desperately needs right now.
I'm saying no to high-speed rail, yes to high-speed internet. We're not out there saying no. We're saying no to the crazy stuff that they're doing and saying yes to the things that we should be moving forward with.
But how's it going with the voters? What's the electorate have to say? On to a discussion now of the political landscape in the United States and the state of Wisconsin. From longtime representatives in western Wisconsin, Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind is a Democrat. State Representative Mike Hipsch is a Republican. They were asked to size up the direction they see the country headed and the mood they find people in as we head into election season. Kind and Hipsch are being asked questions here by UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim and former La Crosse Tribune reporter Dick Mile. Mike Hipsch was first to address a question about what the politicians feel is the lay of the political land heading into the final 2 months.
Well, it's interesting because I was here 2 years ago. I know exactly what it's like just on the other side. It's going to be a very difficult year for Democrats, mainly because they're in control of it all. And a midterm is always an opportunity for the voters to send a message to the party in charge. And usually that's just the president or the governor, whichever, you know, races up. But in this one, we've got such a number of unusual pieces of things coming together. First, there is a great deal of interest and concern amongst my party, both among those who would be, you know, your traditional Republicans, as well as those who were disenfranchised, frankly. I mean, those who felt that the 06 and 08 Congresses, which were, you know, run or had Republican influence, they left what their goals and their original party thought was. And so you've got a number of those people who are coming out who maybe took the 2008 election off and now are back in a vengeance, mm-hmm. you know, with a vengeance. And they're going to go out after anybody who really is perceived as kind of standing for that status quo. You know, it's just, hey, we're doing fine, because we're not. I mean, everybody recognizes that. And a lot of it is blamed on government. I mean, the one thing that I sense and the fear that I hear was summed up best, I think, by a couple of individuals who have said, you know, they feel that there's a fear that we could be the very first generation that passes on a country that is not better off than was handed to us. You know, this is going to be somehow the first time that we give our kids something that's worse than was given to us. And that is a real concern, a real fear. And a lot of it stems from government. You know, in Washington, in Madison, there's just a great deal of anger toward government. And so I think you see this. You know, the interesting thing, it was directed mainly at Republicans in 2008. And I mean, I remember very clearly, we went out, at least in the state level, we went out with a message that, frankly, they just didn't believe. I mean, they weren't believing us. And I think that, you know, Ron's colleagues in the Democratic Party are seeing a lot of that right now. You know, you can go out there with the message, everything you've done, everything that you've stood for a number of years. And frankly, the majority of voters just don't believe you anymore. And it's really hard to break through.
Ron, what are you finding? Is what Mike is saying, is that pretty much the landscape that you're seeing?
You know, Dick, what I've been encountering as I travel through western Wisconsin, you know, it's all eyes and all hands on deck when it comes to the economy. What do we need to do working together to get this economy back on track, creating good-paying jobs? But, you know, anger is not a good governing philosophy. Yes, we face some serious issues in this nation, and now more than ever, it's going to require all of us, Republican, Democrat, Independents, to figure out a way to come together, start listening to each other, find some practical solutions to the challenges that we are facing. And I've always believed elections are about tomorrow. They're about the future of our country and our state. And that's why I would hope that the voters out there throughout the country and back home here hold the candidates accountable to ideas. You know, don't get sold on a bill of generalities and platitudes and, you know, anti-government and I hate budget deficits. Everyone hates budget deficits. What are the specifics with the candidates running out there? And I think that's what voters want to hear more of, rather than just angry shouts and accusations flying back and forth. But we also, I think, it's important for us to frame this in the proper context. Let's remember where we're coming from. You know, when President Obama was sworn into office, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. We had a negative 6.5% gross domestic product, an economy that was shrinking in some fear, as I did, it was in a free fall. We'd already lost $17 trillion of wealth in the stock market. And since that time, we just had a report come out today on the jobs numbers. We've had 8 consecutive months of private sector job creation in this country. In fact, we're on track this year alone of seeing more private sector jobs created than the entire 8 years of the Bush administration.
Do you think that's enough to stem some of the concern and some of the anger?
Clearly not, because the electorate? We are not there yet. This economy is not growing as strong and as fast, and it's not creating the jobs that we need. And that's going to require all of us pulling together. And quite frankly, you know, this hasn't turned around as quickly as some people would have liked to have seen. And that's because I think there's a lot of deleveraging taking place, which was long overdue in our country. And we need more of that when it comes to the public budget deficits that we're facing.
Define that. What is deleveraging?
A reduction in debt. And we're seeing that with businesses out there. We're especially seeing it with consumer debt. In fact, a report just came out that consumers now are spending more money to reduce their credit card debt, and it's at a 10-year low. And now we need major deleveraging with our public budgets at the federal and at the state and local level to bring things back into balance. But to sum up where the economy is right now, you know, we went from a nation that had a negative 2% savings rate to a nation that is at 6% savings rate almost overnight. In the long term, that's very healthy, and it's something that was long overdue. But when everyone decides to do it at the same time, we get the economy that we have today. No one's out there spending money, and when businesses aren't selling products, they're not going to hire people. And so it gets back to the all-elusive consumer and investor confidence, and what is it going to take to get that back on track.
Both of you are incumbents, of course. What, in your opinion, explains this so-called anti-incumbency movement? Is it more pronounced in Wisconsin or less pronounced in Wisconsin than it is nationally?
Each campaign, each election is going to be different around the country. I mean, you take a look at what's happening all over the nation. And what I see happening out there, and it's maybe Mike can address this on the Republican side better, but there seems to be a lot more challenges occurring in the Republican primaries. Again, this kind of internal civil war that's taking place with some of the so-called Tea Party candidates that are running out there and defeating some of the Republican incumbents. You look at Bob Bennett in Utah, Lisa Murkowski right now in Alaska. They took a run at John McCain down in Arizona. And you're seeing a lot of that internal strife occurring on the Republican side, less so on the Democratic side. And then I think the great story come November 3rd this year is who ultimately does get elected. But more importantly, what type of attitude do they bring with them to Madison or to Washington? And if it's an attitude of uncompromising, very strict ideological blinders, then we need to brace ourselves for more gridlock and nothing really getting done in the near term. But if candidates are running with ideas and a willingness to listen to each other and to keep an open mind, I still believe we have a lot more in common as Americans than differences between Republicans or Democrats or even independents. But for some reason, compromise has become the four-letter word in the political system. And that's when a democracy can shut down if no one's willing to engage in give and take and understand you're not going to get everything that you want.
I think there is a – I wouldn't necessarily say it's a civil war on the Republican side, but there is a review of those who have been there for our party and who have been our spokespeople, who have been our leaders, who have been our elected senators and congressmen. And there's a redirection. There is a litmus test, if you will, as to whether or not you're going to stick with those conservative values that you ran on and you talked about. And I don't want to get confrontational, but basically what we've got is the Republicans are out there wanting to make sure that they've got the right candidate because the Democrats dead and they know it. I mean, they will crawl across broken glass to vote to make sure the Democrat's not going to get elected, so they want to make sure that the right Republican is out there. That is what's going on in my party. Now, obviously, on the Democratic side, you try to pull out the good things that have occurred. And Ron talked about them. I mean, you talk about debt going down, which is absolutely a good thing. You talk about some of those other things, but you also have to recognize the reality, like in Wisconsin, where 180,000 people who had a job 2 years ago don't today. You know, it's all of those things that start to pile up that people recognize that it's going in the wrong direction, and a lot of them blame it on the broadening scope of government, the fact that government has gone much further than it should, and the fact that people aren't spending money is not rocket science. People who have money to spend, who have the ability to invest, won't do it because they have no idea what the next regulation is going to be from government. They have no idea what the next policy is going to be that's going to punish them even more. And you talk to people who, you know, small in Wisconsin, for the most part, it's small business people. 80% of Wisconsinites are employed by small business people, and they just are scared out of their mind to invest in their own company right now because they think they're going to be punished for it. When you have a mentality like that, it's very hard to get a to get any type of an economy going. And then you couple that with, again, federal regulations that come in and perhaps in some instances were rightfully necessary to make sure that the banks are lending to people who, you know, have the ability to pay it back and things along those lines, which, by the way, you know, successful banks, mainly in Wisconsin, were doing all along anyway. But you have a situation where the people with money, the banks, cannot loan it to the people who want to try and expand, and they can't get the dollars that are available. It's just we are in a stagnation that needs to be broken, and it really will come, I believe, with significant change after the election in November.
What has the federal government done right the last 2 years? What have they done wrong in the last 2 years?
I think it was important, Joe, for us to pass Wall Street reform. You know, just going back to the same rules wasn't good enough. Certainly not preceding the crisis that we went into, and being able to bring these derivatives and hedge funds and these these fancy financial instruments out of the shadows and into the light of day was something that should have been done a long time ago. And then having the ability to be able to systemically dissolve these large banks when they get into trouble again, so there'll be no opportunity or possibility for a taxpayer bailout, sends a clear signal to Wall Street that they're on their own. And now we finally have the tools to dissolve them in a fashion that won't jeopardize the entire U.S. and global economy along with it. And along with that measure, we passed for the first time a Consumer Financial Protection Agency, an entity whose sole function will be to keep an eye on these consumer financial products to make sure that they're legit and that they're not taking advantage of people back home. Before, all the rules, all the regulations were dealing with banks and what they could or couldn't do, and nothing was there to protect the consumer in this country. And that, too, I think was an important step in the Wall Street reform. But I also think, and I know Michael disagreed with me, and most of my Republican colleagues did with their votes, but healthcare reform is important, because the status quo was unsustainable. If we did nothing with health care, we know what would have happened. The costs would have continued to go up. There would have been more uninsured people in this country. Businesses large and small wouldn't have been able to compete globally because of rising health care costs. And it's the fastest growing area of spending at the federal, state, and local level, and for businesses and families alike. So doing nothing wasn't a good option. And we can talk about the details of what we're trying to move forward on, and hopefully we'll be able to at some point reach an area where we can engage our Republican friends again so they can offer constructive ideas in regards to how we can make the healthcare system work for all Americans. But just saying no and staying on the sidelines, I don't think is a good way to solve what I think is one of the biggest challenges that we face in this country today, and that's the healthcare system and the rising costs.
What has the federal government done wrong?
When you implement change and reform, like financial reform, healthcare reform, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. And uncertainty is the enemy in the private sector and for businesses. They want to know what the rules are. They want to know what they can expect 6 months and 6 years from now. And when you're doing change, and I think it's change that was long overdue, there's that element of uncertainty in the private sector that does keep people on the sidelines somewhat until they have a clear picture of what's going to happen in the future. So the sooner, you know, Washington, Madison, and even local governments can bring greater clarity of what the rules are going to be as we move forward as a nation, I think the sooner you're going to see more business activity and more investment pick up then.
You know, both at the federal and the state level, some of the things that they've done right is recognize some of the mistakes of the past and make some of those corrections. You know, some of the lending practices and some of the reforms that were necessary to start reining in really unregulated or run amok type of financial practices. You know, and some of that, frankly, starts also with the federal government. I mean, Freddie Mae, Fannie Mae,
Did I say that right? Yeah.
I mean, those programs that really were putting people, and even I think Congressman Barney Frank recently said that perhaps we did provide housing dollars to people who shouldn't have been in a home, that didn't have the ability to make those payments and stay and keep up that house. So recognizing some of the changes that were required were absolutely necessary. And so they did some of the reining in. Some of the things that they did wrong, obviously, I would start with the healthcare package. I would agree with Ron in that the status quo could not continue. I mean, we were headed toward disaster. What they did just sped up the disaster, in my opinion. I think, you know, the Republicans haven't sat on the sideline. We have come with ideas. And a lot of with healthcare reform is what you need to do is get government to either pay their fair share or get them out of the program completely. I mean, the biggest problem in Wisconsin that we've got is the underpayment of Medicaid patients. I mean, if we just paid what private private payers have to pay, we wouldn't have that tax care, that health care shift. You wouldn't have the massive problems. And you also need to set up a situation where individuals are going to have some ability to have some influence in their health care decisions, not just picking a doctor and things like that, but also determining what a procedure costs. And you can only do that by making them part of the component as far as part of the paying component.
Did the health care bill do enough?
It puts the tools in place, Dick, that will lead us to a change in the payment system, starting with the Medicare, which is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And we're going to be changing the fee-for-service system to a fee-for-value system, which is exactly what Gunderson and Mayo and Marshfield and our providers up here have been calling for years. Because unless we do that, these costs are going to continue to be shifted onto private businesses, which is unfair for our people back home, given that our health care providers are producing some of the best outcomes and best results in the entire nation.
Do you believe that, Mike?
Let me just say this. As far as the health care package is concerned, I think there are some good things in there. I really do. I mean, there are some reforms that could change things, but at what tremendous cost? Some of the things that are going to come in place may or may not occur in 2014, but the costs occur right now. And that's one of the things, at a time when our economy is struggling, the worst in our lifetime, and certainly the worst since the Great Depression. It was a time when now taxes are going to go up, spending continues to go up, and you're right. President Obama inherited a huge deficit that I was very concerned about how I was going to pay for. The deficit that we have today, I don't think my grandchildren will be able to pay for. I mean, we are bankrupting this country toward policies that will expand government control and influence over many areas of our lives, and that's simply opposed to everything I believe in. It's just not the direction we should be going.
Let me ask you both about the stimulus, because this is a source of a lot of debt. And starting under President Bush, there was a stimulus under the thinking that the recession would get worse if we didn't do anything. And President Obama, you know, continued that and expanded on that. Where are you in that?
The stimulus would have had a real strong and positive impact in states like Wisconsin had it been used for the factor of being one-time money, and we use it for one-time expenditures like infrastructure. I mean, we have tremendous infrastructure needs not only in our transportation system, our telecommunication system, a number of other areas where we could have used those dollars. Instead of about the $3.2 billion that we got from the federal government in Washington, we spent about 2.6 of it in ongoing expenses, basically putting it into school aids, putting it into things that are leaving us a $2.7 billion hole as we go into the next budget. Essentially, we are going into a budget in this next time where we're $2.7 billion in the hole for commitments that we've already made. And Governor Doyle now most recently wanted to push another $127 million off that the Fiscal Bureau and the Audit Bureau said you can't legally do that unless you go back to the legislature. Those are the practices that, unfortunately, the stimulus brought about was using this to plug a budget and basically try to get through an election.
Let me just say, I supported the American Recovery Act, and I believe it worked the way it was intended to. And that was to try to stabilize an economy that was in a free fall, to buy time to give the private sector an opportunity to get back on its feet again. Before the American Recovery Act was passed, 800,000 jobs were being lost in this country each month. And since the passage of that, we've had 8 consecutive months of private sector job growth. The unemployment rate went down in Wisconsin by 2 percentage points. We're on track of having more private sector jobs created this year than the entire 8 years of the Bush administration. $8 trillion have been restored to the stock market after $7 trillion was just lost before the American Recovery Act. And 40% of the Recovery Act was in the form of tax relief that 96% of Americans received through reduction in the FICA tax rolls and also a large amount of tax relief targeting small businesses through accelerated depreciation, immediate expensing, net operating loss carryback, zero cap gains rate, an increase in the tax credit for new startup costs for small businesses. And there was a lot of money for infrastructure projects here in Wisconsin.
Project the outcome of the November elections for both state of Wisconsin and federal.
I think that I would say right now that the Assembly will go Republican. I think that the Republicans will pick up 4 or 5, maybe even 6 seats in the Assembly. I think the State Senate is still in play. It could go back to the Republicans by maybe 1 seat. And I think that the governor's race is a toss-up. I think that Scott Walker will win the primary. I think that he has the edge going into this election. But frankly, I mean, Wisconsin has proven itself to be a Democratic state for the past several elections. I mean, we like to say that we're purple. We like to say that we're independent. We've voted Democratic at the top of the ticket for quite some time. And I think that that provides a big hill for any Republican to overcome. I think that Scott Walker has that ability to do so. At the federal level, I think that the Republicans will net about 45 seats in the Congress. I think that they will net maybe seven seats in the Senate, maybe eight. I'm not sure they'll get to the magic number of 10. And so I think, and as far as governors across the country, I think you're going to get to about a net gain for Republicans of seven or eight. So it's going to be a very good Republican year, not because the Republicans are more popular, but because of the past 18 months and the concern that people have over the practices of President Obama and the Democratic Congress.
Well, 2 months is still a long time, and we're still 2 months out before November 2nd. A lot can happen between then. But, you know, really, the fundamental issue, and the citizens of this country are the ultimate referee in all this, is whether we continue to move forward, try to make progress, or go back to the failed policies of the past. And I hope and I predict that my good friend, trusted friend Tom Barrett is going to be the next governor of Wisconsin. I like his ideas, more so because he's out there offering specifics in the area of key investments that the state needs to make to move forward, but also cuts that he will go after and hopefully work with the state legislature, willing to go after some of the excessive spending at the state level. And at the federal level, there's no question that there's a tougher environment for Democrats this year, but we have strong candidates out there. We've got, I believe, facts on our side. But the idea, again, of Pete Sessions, of going back to the same exact policies under the Bush administration, ought to give everyone pause about what this campaign and what these elections are all about. Because I do not believe that people want to go back to those failed policies that drove us into this ditch. At a negative 2.2% wage growth for families in this country, doubled our national debt, and left us in the worst economic mess since the Great Depression.
Wisconsin Democratic Congressman Ron Kind of La Crosse and Republican State Representative Mike Hipsch of West Salem talking about the state of politics and the voters as we near the primary next Tuesday and then into the general elections in November. They responded to questions from former La Crosse Tribune political reporter and opinion page editor Dick Mile and UW La Crosse political science professor Joe Heim. There's much more to that interview that you just heard, and it can be found in its entirety on our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. And that wraps up this edition of Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Steve Rysom, Dick Mile, Joe Heim, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. Beginning September 30th and continuing through October, Newsmakers will present a series of interviews featuring candidates in specific area races. On November 30th, we're scheduled to hear from Wisconsin 31st Senate District candidates, incumbent Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma, and challenger Ed Thompson, a Republican from Toma. In October, we're planning to hear from candidates in Western Wisconsin's assembly races. We invite you to watch for details on these and other specials in the weeks to come. Again, our website is wpr.org/lacrosse.